Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 201, I was very privileged to have Laura Wilkinson on the podcast. This is a podcast of a first. This is the first time I've ever had a gold medalist Olympian. I've got to say, we talked about her time in the Olympics, winning the gold medal. We talked about her time after the Olympics, being on Dive USA board. Is that dive? Yep. USA diving board. We also talked about what her sort of life progression of becoming a motivational speaker and a podcaster as well. I've got to say, it was a joy to have her on the podcast. I look forward to speaking to her again in the future. We even talked about a TV show which I've grown to love extremely, Ted Lasso, as well. So please sit back, enjoy the podcast, enjoy the show. Don't forget, subscribe, and yeah, that will help us out a lot. Have a good one, guys. Enjoy the show. Yeah. Peace. Ha-ha. Oh. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 201, I am very privileged to have, yes, how can I put it? Now, she is kind of a novelist, yet she is a podcaster, and yeah, she's a gold medalist Olympian from back in 2000. Like, I'm going to just say this now, like, before the show, she was telling me what the Olympians get up to. They just a secret society where they just gather to destroy us all. We've got to watch them. But yes, Laura Wilkinson, how are you today?
I told you not to share those secrets.
You don't know where I live. Yeah. That's my ultimate defense.
Nice. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I've got to say, yeah, you are my first gold medalist Olympian on. Like, yeah, 10 meter diving, was it? It's not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The higher, the better. Except for I'm not going to the cliff diving. I don't know if you've seen those cliff divers. Yes. They're going up 27 meters. I'm going to draw a line right there. I'm not going that high.
Yeah, the thing what put me off cliff diving, apart from the height and the rocks and potential death, it's the little speedos they have to wear to do that. I don't know if that's a sign of their bravery or whatnot, but you know, you've seen them.
Oh, well, I heard a story. This one diver, David Colturi, said in his very first cliff diving competition, his little tiny speedo ripped right up the back and he was swimming without one to the little rescue boat or whatever. So yeah, you hit him, you might need a little more than that tiny speedo, I'm thinking.
See, that's like, oh, because I, hey, how you doing, mate? I'm fine, everything's good. Oh my God, are you crying? No, you're crying.
<It's> like, just a little bit.
Just a tad. So what drew you to the realm of diving? Come on now. Like, yeah.
Well, I was a gymnast growing up. I saw the Olympics in way back in 1984, and Mary Lou Retton had won the gold for America. And it was like, I've got to do that. That's amazing. And then I realized I wasn't a very good gymnast. And so, that dream of going to the Olympics was still there, but I realized that gymnastics was not going to be the way for me. And so I tried a bunch of different sports until I finally found myself at a pool with a bunch of ex-gymnasts who had also made the transfer over. And we, there was a lot of similarities there. We knew how to flip, we knew how to twist. You just have to learn how to go in on your head instead of your feet, which I made that transition really easy. So I think that tells you what kind of a gymnast I was.
No. It doesn't tell me. Wow. It's like, how was your day in gymnastics? I have a concussion, Mom. I have a concussion, Dad. I'm not too sure what happened. Yes, I was going along. I was like, yeah, pike, twist. Yeah. It's like, yeah, doing it. And yeah, then I came down, saw the ground. That was not a good thing.
Looked good in the air, though.
Gymnastics to diving, apart from finding a sisterhood of ex-gymnasts, Yeah, what did you do before this? Gymnastics, 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 gymnastics. It reminds me of Hot Shots when they're all like sitting there and they get together and like they figure out they're all from the same part and go, Snowy River? So this is the thing, like how long did it take you to like find your diving feet, or I should say your diving skill, should I say?
Yeah, I mean, not very long. I think I just kind of, you know, no pun intended, dove right in. And I think that group of ex-gymnasts, like we were very competitive and we pushed each other and challenged each other. And I think we got really good, really fast. And within 2 years, I had made the national team, qualified for trials. Actually, I didn't qualify for trials that time. I qualified for a World Cup, earned a World Cup medal in synchronized diving. You know, it was kind of already on the scene. So it was kind of a like straight uphill kind of adventure.
Okay. Yeah. Synchronized diving. That is mental. Now, because this is one of the things, okay, every time the Olympics comes on, like, I'll nestle down, put it on, especially if it's in the same time zone, sit there with like some form of cold drink, like Pepsi Max, or like a large flask, with a snack or two. And then I'll watch something like diving. And then I become, in the next 5 minutes, the best armchair judge in the world. That's how I go, yeah. Oh, you see, like, just be like, oh, no, that was an awful dive there. You see how much splashed what came out of there? Oh, yeah, like, yeah, no, that's great dive, like, little splash, but yeah, straight in. Like, yeah. Do you find you often meet people like, yeah, oh, yeah, diving, yeah. They seem to like, I know everything about diving.
Funny. I do. And everybody tells me their story of when they were little and they hit their head on the diving board. Like, I always hear the stories and I see the armchair quarterbacks telling me what a lovely job I did, or not. And, but the funny thing is when I sit there and watch the Olympics and all the sports that I know nothing about, I become the same way. So, you know, I totally understand. And I get sucked into.
Yeah. I could just, but this is the thing. But this is the bad thing about it, because if you're doing that whole armchair judging, especially if you're at the Olympics and you have finished your event and now all you're just doing is bowling around the Olympic Village, like going to various places like McDonald's. I don't know how the hell that makes it into every Olympic Village, but you must be like going, like you must watch other people's events and then like and you meet up with these people later and go, it's like, and like, this is the thing. You can't, like, they can't, if they haven't meddled, they can't really come back at you because you're there with like, going for gold. It's like, oh, yes, come on. Have you ever done that to anyone? Have you? Go on.
No. You know, it's funny. I remember in 2000, there was a boxer or something that had won a silver medal and he was wearing it all over the village on the bus. And we were like, oh, that's so cute. Like, that's awesome, whatever. And then I got my medal and people were like, you gonna wear yours on the bus? And I was like, no.
So I go, I seem to get on the bus. Look at my silver medal. And you're sitting there like, yeah, like bronze, silver is good, but it's not as like gold. Like, get all gold member with him. Yes, I love gold.
I prefer to keep my bling to myself, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like this is the thing. Now, one of the things which I do find, how can I say, interesting about you, and maybe it speaks to the nature of the competitor in which lives within you, ever raging at the moon. It's like going, you decided to go, okay, I'm quitting. But you went, okay, I'm coming back. Why? like, look, you've got 4 kids, you've got a husband, you do a podcast, you write a book, and like, yeah, you do talks as well. Like, you just thought, you know what, this 5 minutes in a day, I can fit that in. What's that about?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've never followed the right path, I guess. You know, I've always kind of just done my own thing. I mean, I didn't start diving till I was 15. I didn't quit till I was 30, and that was late then. You know, it was one of those things, like when I retired, I didn't want to be done diving necessarily. I just was ready to be mom.
Yes.
And so we did that. And then after a few years, I came by the pool just to say hi to my coach and have the kids, you know, see what was going on in the pool. And my coach was like, you should just get in and play sometime, you know, have some me time, some like mommy time away from the kids. And I was like, all right. So I came in for like 1 hour, one day a week, you know, and I would just kind of come in those Monday mornings and just play. And, you know, something happened when I hit the water, it was like, I was home again, you know, and I just kept coming back week after week, just doing my little thing. And then it just kind of, you know, kept going. I kept doing more and more. And I was like, would I be crazy to try this again? And when my coach said no, I was like, all right, well, maybe we give it a try. And my husband said, hey, I can be home in the fall. Like, why don't you just take the fall, take a few months, go all in full time. And then you'll know after a few months, either, yeah, I can do this, or yeah, I'm done. You know? Oh. So I did that. I went back in the fall and I went all in. And by January, I had my entire list back off the 10 meter. I was like, okay, I guess we're doing this.
Yeah, but like, okay, now, did you do the same training regime you did like when you were like, hey, back when you won the medal? Or did you do like, is it a case of you went, hey, the mind's willing, but the body's like going, you are crazy.
Right. Yeah. So I try to be smart, you know, and I do need a little more recovery these days. So I was doing mostly like all my workouts in the mornings, instead of doing two a days, like where we go back twice, I would just do kind of one long practice with weights or whatever strength or whatnot in the afternoon. And that seemed to work better. I could do all of the workouts, but then I was so fried by the end of the week, it was hard to recover from. So the one a days, I seemed to be able to get enough into it because I didn't have to learn the basics all over again. You know, I understood like that came back pretty quick. So, you know, while you have to get your body back in there, I mean, it's like riding a bike, but it's like riding a rusty bike that needs, you know, some cleaning, some WD-40, you know, a little, like you gotta get used to it again, but it comes back a lot quicker. So you don't have to build that base all over again. So you're starting from kind of a different point, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I hear you. But like, it must be kind of strange when you're getting back into it, like that sort of, that appetite coming back, like, you know, it, does that ever, like for yourself, did that ever really go away? Or was it just a case of it was just like, hey, I need to get out. Get me out. I need to get out. Yeah,
because, are you talking about like the competitive appetite? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it ever went away, but sometimes it's hard to redirect it. You know what I mean? Sometimes people find other things, like whether it's a certain type of job or they get into like, you know, they run marathons, they do something totally different where they can kind of direct that competitiveness. I didn't really have anything. And then we had all these little kids. I mean, I had three kids under 3 years old for a little bit. And that was like, you know, and that, there's nowhere to put your competitiveness. You're just like surviving. So, you know, it was definitely there, but like I had no outlet. And that was a really kind of hard thing to deal with, you know, but I learned, you know, I figured out how to like function without being able to direct it, which was hard. So it kind of, I think when I first came back, I didn't know what to do with it. You know, I think I tried to suppress it. And I noticed that like looking back, even though I haven't been able to be real consistent in the last few years, I was almost afraid to be all in my aggressiveness and the way I used to be. And so I found myself holding back where I think if I had just allowed me to be me, it would have been better, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. Where do you think you would have like sort of like, well, if you let you be you like back then, and I think you being you is definitely on the rise at this present time. Where are you putting that sort of focus and energy, or where would you like to put that focus and energy? Because look, if like outside of the four kids and the husband, I don't even know if you got a dog or a cat or whatnot, but yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, like, I feel like I had that. I would use that when I first, you know, was in there between 2000, 2008, like I let myself be me in the competition. What I'm saying is like this time around in my 40s, I feel like I was holding myself back a little bit, which sounds so weird, but I think, I don't know what it was. You know, I think maybe I was just trying to do all the things a certain way instead of just kind of letting that go and letting myself come out. But I had so many disadvantages the last couple of years training wise, because with the pandemic happening, I had actually just come back from a 2-level neck surgery. I have a nice titanium plate in my neck now. So it took me a year, you know, recovering using things like my Orthofix bone stimulator and stuff like that to get back up on the 10 meter. And as I get back up and start competing again, the world shut down. And so we had no access to anything like most people did for a while. Well, the Olympics got postponed to this year. We weren't allowed, we don't have at our local facility, we don't have a platform. So we always have to drive to another location kind of far away. And they wouldn't let us in until this past April. And so again, I only had like 3 months up on the platform before our trials. So like, I felt very unprepared. And I think that's why I was afraid to be aggressive and to be mean, because I didn't feel confident going into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting how like, I'm 43 years old. I've been doing this on and off for 28 years and I'm still trying to figure out how to do it.
Well, you know what? Like, this is the thing. Quite often it's not easy trying to find that, what we call the path, the way, some people would say. And like, you know, when you like, okay, this is it. And like, you could be hyper-focused on one thing. And when, look, I only can imagine when you hit the heights of hitting that gold, it's like going, I feel people who perform at your level or in any type of competition like that, it can go two ways. It's like, hunger for something more, or despair because you've achieved the very thing you've prepared for. 4 years of prep, getting there, and yes, you are the best person in the world in your event at that time. It's like I'm curious, how did it, like, when you got there, what was your sort of thoughts when you got the medal? You stood on the stage, like, you stood on the platform, you listened to the anthem, and like, went, yeah, what was going through your mind?
I love that you bring that up, the you know, wanting more or the despair. That's really interesting. I mean, when it first happened, I mean, it was so overwhelming to me because I had no idea. I wasn't able to see the scoreboard during the competition. I knew I was in the hunt. I had no idea I had been in the lead and that I won until after the last diver went, and my coach came running over and picked me up and kept saying, "We did it. We did it." And I was like, "Oh, we did what?" I was like, "We medaled." And like, no, he's like, "No, we did it." You know, and I was like, "Oh," you know, so it was kind of, it was really overwhelming because I had no idea what was happening. And you know, by the time we were on the podium and I was like looking for my family, I felt like the anthem was halfway through already. And it just happened so fast. And then it's over. And it's like, you have this lifetime of buildup and all this energy and emotions and pain and all these things that go into this one moment in time. And then it's over. In like the blink of an eye, it's just over. And you're like, whoa, you know, it's a little overwhelming and you don't know what to do with yourself, you know, because it is kind of like, well, what now, on a good or bad scale? It's like, what happens next? And, you know, a lot of Olympians, and I don't know if you follow a lot of Olympians online, but a lot of people are starting to talk about now that little Olympic depression you can get afterward, whether it went well or it didn't go well. There's this just letdown of emotions and adrenaline that has been building up for so long. And it's hard to rectify that sometimes, you know, and I've had an Olympics where I won, and then I've had others where I didn't do very well, where I was just short of the medals, another one where I was kind of injured, you know, so I've been through all of the emotions, and it's never easy to rectify. But I think we need to also understand that our identity and our self-worth is not wrapped up in our score or our placement at the end of the meet. There has to be more, and you have to know that you have self-worth and value beyond your performance, you know, and you can want that performance and you can be mad at it and you can regroup and try to do better next time. But like, you've got to know that you are more than your performance. And that's the biggest thing that I think helps me get through that.
So would you say you're a person who really sort of like, reflects on like basically not so much their actions, but where you are in the place in life, if you get what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think all of that, you know, I mean, I definitely will go back and study like what I did technically and all those things and try to improve. But I also try to look back because I've realized, having had a major injury before 2000 and I was forced to do a lot of visualization and mental work for months on end, I realized how strong the mind is. So I do also like to go back and say, okay, where was my head in this competition? Did I do well? Did I not do well? And what was I thinking about leading up to that? And what made the difference? Because I had another situation in 2005 where I had a botched wrist surgery going into our world championships, what I thought was going to be my final competition. And I couldn't dive very much. Like, I would get into a practice and I may get 10 dives off. I may get one dive off. I never knew because I was in a lot of pain. But it forced me into a different place in my head where every dive might be my last dive. So it had to be good. And it was the first time I'd ever won a preliminary in a world championship. And I ended up winning the prelims and staying in the lead and won the finals, my first world title. And so so I feel like every time I've had these injuries, I've been forced into this different state mentally. And it's great though, because then you can draw from that in other competitions, even when you're 100% healthy. So I love looking at the mental side and the emotional side too. A lot of people say you've got to control your emotions. Well, I think you can use your emotions. I think emotions are great. You just have to know how to guide and direct them. But yeah, I definitely like to study that part as well.
Yeah, because like this is the thing, when you say you can control your emotions, like I think it comes down to sometimes looking at it from the certain point of view, because like when people like, and I've seen this many a time, when like you hear someone get interviewed after like an event or like a competition, it's like they go, "Were you nervous?" Like they don't ask if someone was you excited? Were you caught up in the moment? Like it's like, no, were you nervous? They go to the negative quite quickly. And like I can't recall ever hearing anyone saying anything but that. I'm sure, like, what did they ask you when you were, after you were interviewed?
Yeah, I think, how does it feel? You know, yeah. Classic. Nerves are part of it. If you're not nervous, I mean, maybe it doesn't matter to you. Like, I feel like nerves tell you that the thing is important and they're not bad. Mm. You just have to know how to use them, you know, and not let them get so out of control, you know, to where they're using you.
I hear you. So I would imagine, like, have you, like, with regards to, like, your life outside of sports, outside of the Olympics, out there in the big wide world, like, have you used, like, many of these sort of techniques to sort of get you through, like, the daily grind of life?
Definitely. And it's funny because I think sometimes I forget that I can do that, because life feels so removed sometimes from sport. But I love telling my story because I think sports is such a great analogy or metaphor for life, because mm-hmm. sports is so black and white, you know, where life feels so gray, but you can take those lessons from a black and white world and apply them to this very gray area that you're trying to navigate. You know, like I talk about the first time I ever jumped off 10 meter. I was terrified because it was, you know, it was a lot higher looking down from the top of the 10 meter than it was looking up in the ground. And I didn't know how I was going to land. I didn't know if I'd get hurt. I didn't know if I'd end up, you know, somewhere else. I didn't know. I just didn't know. And it was scary. It was terrifying. But I had to take that jump. Like I couldn't dip my toe in from the 10 meter to see if the water felt nice. Like I had to jump in with both feet. And that's very much how life is. You know, we try to dip our toe in, but really you got to commit to something. People say, "I try my best." Well, trying your best is kind of a cop-out. You're either doing your best or you're not. And so I have to remember that, like, am I in with both feet? Am I jumping in with both feet here and I'm committed to what I'm doing? Or am I trying to dip my toe in the water and be like, "I don't know. I don't know. It's too cold. I don't know if I want to do this," you know?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Like, hey, as a very wise puppet used to say, try or try not. Like, yeah. And like, this is the thing. I'm not surprised you said that with regards to the t-shirt you're wearing. Yeah. Burn the boats. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I was about to say, wait, is that a Goggins t-shirt? But no.
Gotta be all in.
excellent. So with that sort of all-in approach, what would you say, what was the next step after you went, okay, I've got my Olympic gold, I'm out there, like, you know what I mean? Like, what's next? What did you go on to do next? What was that next stage?
Well, it's funny because I don't think I ever planned on being done after that Olympics, because I kind of felt like I was just getting started. I was only 22 and I'd only been diving like 7 years. And so I kind of thought I was still at the beginning, and I knew I was capable of doing a lot harder dives that I had kind of played with before. So I knew I was going to be around for a while. So it was more of this weird adjustment of like, okay, now I'm an Olympic champion. Now, how do I walk out in this next phase? Like, how do I handle being an Olympic champion and being this defending champion is what they kept calling me. And, you know, and I remember a year later, I'd had to have surgery on my foot. I went back and finished my college degree, and I had just gotten back in the water for a couple of months, and I went to the nationals, which was my first meet since the Olympics.
Nice.
And I got fifth.
Oh.
So I went from Olympic champion champion of the world to fifth place at nationals. And it was the best thing that could have happened to me because I thought, like, I don't know, I thought the world would end or something, but like all I got from people on the deck were, I'm so happy to see you. It's great to see you diving again. We're so glad you're back. We're happy you're here. Nobody cared that I had a bad meet. You know what I mean? And it really made me realize that, again, like, I'm not my performance. People care about me beyond just what I'm doing in the pool. Like, yes, that can make a difference. It can inspire people. It can do all these wonderful things, but people love and care about me outside of the pool also. And that I needed that. I needed to know that, you know, and so it was a hard, humbling lesson to learn, but I think a really important one.
Just like, that's like coming out. Just like, I'm Olympic champion. You're like, come out of the competition. You're fifth.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. A little let down there.
I see. So like, yeah, after you quit diving, what would you say you got into next after that?
Well, I retired diving in 2008. So after my third Olympic Games, and really, I mean, my whole goal was like to be a mom. You know, I just really wanted that next phase. I wanted a family. I'd been married to my husband for 6 years. We were just kind of ready. And, you know, in diving and sports, when you like put in the hard work, you do all the things, you usually see results. But, you know, we had trouble getting pregnant. There was a time where I thought we couldn't have kids. So it was actually a really difficult process. And we ended up starting the adoption process for our daughter Zoe in China. And then a year into that wait, found out we were pregnant with our oldest. And so we ended up, you know, adopting and having a biological kid. And then that was such a great experience that we started another adoption process. And 3 days later, found out I was pregnant again. So we ended up with 4 kids, you know, from basically 3 different countries and within like this small time. And so it's been absolutely crazy and awesome all at the same time.
Look, I am not a parent. I am not a parent. I would say this to you now, but like, this is the whole thing. Like, with one child, yes, you are a parent. With 2 children, you are kind of like, like, how can I say? You're kind of like a referee. With 3 children, you're now moving on to like, more like crowd control. And then with 4 kids, I don't know. You're like, you've got to be some type of miracle worker. You know what I mean? Yeah, 2 kids.
Well, it's funny. At some point, you're like, what's one more, you know? No, they're fun, though. I mean, honestly, now it's good because they have built-in friendships, you know? And so it's cool to watch the 4 of them kind of change up who they go play with. Like, these 2 might pair off to play Legos, and then these 2 may want to go play Barbies, and then they'll switch up, and these 2 get along when they want to read comic books together, and these 2 will go, you know. So it's kind of neat to see their individual little relationships start playing. And honestly, I have friends with 1 kid, and they're having to entertain their kid all the time, and it's actually really nice to have 4 because they can just kind of entertain each other. So that's a good thing. It is a good thing.
I see the classic parent like that. Go and play. There you go. Off you go. Go and play. He's like, yeah, go ahead. I feel sorry for your son because I have this theory that, he's like, I'm outnumbered. It's like, help
he
me.
Is. Well, like, you know, my husband also has 3 sisters, so they kind of can commiserate together on what it's like to be the only man. So, yeah.
It's like, did they do this to you? No, Dad, they haven't. Watch out. They will. It's like, if they do this, like, exactly. Fade to the left. Fade to the right, and you'll get away.
Yeah, lock your door.
Like, one of the things like I find interesting, you became a board member of US Diving. What sort of new challenges did that bring to the forefront for you?
Yeah, that was interesting. So I was an athlete representative on the board for 4 years. And we'd gone through a lot of stuff in transition after the 2004 Olympic Games. And, you know, I felt like our team was always fighting against the governing body. And so, you know, and I was very vocal at a lot of our like town hall meetings and things going on because there were just a lot of stuff affecting my teammates and things and me personally. And so, you know, we were trying to make a difference. And so I got on the board to try to be that difference. And it's really hard when you have a group of people who just want to do things the way it's always been done because it's safe and safe is ruining our governing body and our program as a sport. So we needed change and we needed things to be different. And I kind of just, it was really hard because we were so outnumbered that I felt like the athletes were always kind of in a losing battle on that side. And so it was kind of an infuriating 4 years, honestly. And I was glad to be done with that. It's kind of sad, really. I feel like I was on there and it made no difference at all. And so it's very discouraging in a lot of ways, but I think that's honestly a reason I wrote my book, a reason I do my podcast, because I felt like I couldn't make a difference there within the organization. So I'm going to try to make a difference for athletes in the way that I can. You know, I'm going to bring resources to them. I'm going to share stories with them. I'm going to try to encourage them in other ways that I can, you know? So it just, honestly, I have to look at it as like, that was not a waste of time. It just showed me a way that didn't work, you know, and now I'm going to find a way that does work.
Yeah. I often find that strange about organizations where, okay, yeah, you've done something which brought you like great success and you think, okay, let's stick to that. And you know what? It's fine and good for a period of time, but everyone else starts to emulate that success. Because I go, okay, yeah, see what they've done. Let's copy their program. Let's do this. And then someone from like somewhere around the other side of the world or like another organization goes, yeah, but we keep all of this. That's a great foundation. But if we put this on top of this as well, ooh, that's something new. That's something special. And I don't understand why some organizations, like sporting, government, wherever, like companies, why they do that. It's just like, you can't stand still. You got to always keep moving forward or you will be overtaken eventually. Yeah,
exactly. You've always got to be innovating and changing. Yes, see what works, but also see what you can do better. Like always seek to improve. When you start just sitting on your laurels and expecting that to ride you out, like you're going to stay here. You may stay where you are, but everybody else, like you were saying, is going to get better and better and you're still going to be here, which maybe that was good back in the day, but eventually it's not going to be good enough.
Yeah. No, I've seen it too many times. And like, yeah, you kind of like look at it and go, yeah, you guys have like forgotten. Like, look, there was a reason why you did like change things up in the beginning. Remember that reason. Remember that why. And look, if it was to make the US diving team the most successful diving team in the world, remember that. And like, yeah, keep pushing it. But yeah. So with regards to like getting into the, how can I say, more politics side of things, you found like, yeah, like, is it a case of you went, no, this is not for me and I cannot like keep bashing my head against the wall? And like, yeah, what did you think of like doing next after that? Or was it just a case of, you know, I mean, let's see where fate takes me?
No, I mean, I think we had like 4 year terms. And so that's kind of, I filled out my term and I couldn't, you know, I think I did, I don't know if it was two-year terms or how it worked out, but when my time was up, I couldn't go again. And so that was kind of the end of my opportunity there too. But yeah, I'm not one to really be quiet if there's an issue. Like I'm happy to speak up and defend people, especially if it like, it's funny, like when things are affecting me, like I, you know, I'll hold strong, I'll defend myself, whatever. When it's affecting like a teammate, then I get all mad, you know, like then it's like, okay, we got to do whatever we can to help this person, you know, because it's funny how, you know, maybe it's the mom side of me coming out, but I've kind of always been that way, but it's like defending people is more like gets me more riled up than even how something's affecting myself. But I mean, I think I'm always going to be that way. That's just kind of who I am.
All right. What sort of brings out that sort, like what's been instilled in you to have this sort of, yes, like, come on, citizens, I'm here to protect you type.
I don't know. I mean, I think I've always been like that with my friends. Like I'm not a super touchy feely person all the time, but like, I am like loyal, you know? I mean, I think that's just something deep in me is like, I'm very loyal and I will go to bat for people. It's just kind of the way I've been wired or the way I was made. I have no idea. I've always been like that.
I can see someone like one of your friends, come on, let me give you a hug. Stay the hell away from me. It's like, next thing, someone's trying like picking on them. You touch her, I will end you. I will end you today. End you. Like, I love that girl. She's like my sister. But like, afterwards, you're like, can we hug now?
I'm okay with hugs. That's about it though. Okay. It's funny. Like I had this personality test somebody gave me, I don't know, like after I was done diving and they said, wow, you've got like these amazing CEO qualities and all this, but like, you don't ever touch people. And they measured it not just with my answers, but with like people who are really close to me. And they're like, it would serve you well to like, you know, learn how to touch people on the shoulder, like show them that you're there for like, be more compassionate that way. And I was like, whoa, that's like way weird to me. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm okay giving hugs when I see you, but like the touch, like it was so odd to me. But now that I have kids, I'm always touching them and I'm always like hanging on them. And I think it's actually making me better at that. So I'm trying to be less weird and like, you know? But it's funny. I think it's great to recognize these things about yourself that maybe you're not good at and that might make other people around you more comfortable. So yeah, I'm working. I feel like I'm always a work in progress. So, but I guess we all are. So.
It's like a work in progress. I like this. I like this. Yeah. Like, you know, look, this is the thing. Yes. I can give out a high five. I can give out a hug. Like, yeah, like touchy feeling. I wouldn't say I'm touchy feely, but like, yeah, I won't say I like touching people because that's just wrong and gets you on the register. Leave that alone. It's like, yeah, it's like, I'm okay with human contact when it's consensual and fine. There you go. It's like, no one's come for me today, but that's another story.
Yeah. I just opened up a whole can of worms, didn't I?
It's like, no, it's not like that. You're taking this out of context. But yeah.
Exactly. Context is important.
Just like going, yes, always the context. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, you are like president and founder. Laura Wilkinson Foundation. Yes. What does your foundation do?
Well, we started it right in my last year of diving because they were tearing down the facility I grew up training in.
Yeah.
And so the goal was to build a new facility. And we, you know, got really close a few times actually combining with like a hospital and making this huge complex, like a training center, housing like multiple sports and things. It was really exciting. And it just happened twice and things just fell through at the last minute. And it was really hard, you know? So we've, in turn, since we haven't been able to build a facility yet, we have helped secure like dry land housing where we do like all our gymnastics and trampoline work and things like that. We've helped with that. We've helped our local team, you know, so we're trying to help some different teams in the area with both with facilities, with equipment, things like that as of now. But I think we're going to start a new campaign soon to go about it a different route, but trying to bring another facility to the area.
Oh, like, do you have an idea what route you might take? Or is it a case of you're like trying to work it out still?
We're still trying to work it out. But I think instead of doing this huge complex that we were originally, you know, partnering with some developers to do, I think now we're just going to start with diving and the needs of diving with like a platform and a full diving well, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to ask this because like diving platforms, the 10 meter, like what is the highest it goes up to?
Well, for Olympic competition, it's 10 meter. So the juniors, like the kids that are coming up, they can do the 5 meter or the 7.5 meter also. And you can do that in like US college diving as well. But once you get to that senior level circuit, you have to be off the 10 meter. But if you're crazy and you start doing like Cirque du Soleil shows and Red Bull cliff diving series, the women go off 20 meters and the men go off 27 meters. And you have to go feet first because you could like dislocate shoulders. And yeah, it's crazy. Exactly. I've stunned you into silence.
No, that's like, okay, right. Why would you do that to yourself? It's like, okay. Ouch. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I was told they hit off 27 meters at like 60 miles per hour. I don't know what that is for kilometers for you guys, but that's, I mean, 60 miles an hour is pretty fast.
No, UK, we do miles.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Put it this way, we're in this kind of weird realm of limbo. Like, because, okay, we'll do miles per hour. And we measure out most things in miles, but we will like use like kilos, like for weighing stuff,
right,
like, in each other, as well as like imperial stones and pounds. It's like, yeah, like, yeah. If I was to like, yeah, but we measure height in feet and inches. We don't do it in like, yeah. So Beautiful. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I thought you guys did meters and centimeters. Okay, wow.
No. Nope. Okay. Like, look, put it this way. The metric system is one of the, like, how can I put it? It was looked upon in, like, it's a practical way of measuring things, but we're not going to use it full time. It's part time. So if we heard someone from mainland Europe and go, yes, he's 100 and blah, blah, blah centimeters, you would stare at them blankly like, huh? I will stare at them blankly too, because that means nothing to me.
Okay, that's, wow. I did not know. I feel like I should have known that. That's awesome.
Oh yeah, no, the UK. We are forward looking as well as staying firmly in the past. Yes. Can't help it. So, like, this is the thing. Like, I have to say, yeah, I've listened to one of your motivational speaking slots. And, like, yes, very inspirational, very motivating. So, like, yeah, religion seems to be, like, a very big cornerstone in your life. What, like, did you, was that something for all of your life, or was it something you discovered later in life? And how?
Good question. Kind of both. I grew up in church, and, you know, so I think I had a lot of that kind of, not ingrained, but like there was kind of a foundation there. Like, I understood a little bit about the Bible growing up, but I kind of walked away in high school and was just kind of doing my own thing. And throughout the beginning of college, and, you know, I kind of took the reins of my life, and I was making a mess of things, as you do. And I kind of hit rock bottom. I'd lost a lot of people close to me. Mm. I was just very desperate. I felt like my life was kind of spiraling out of control. And, you know, the one thing I thought I had left was diving. I thought, as long as I have diving, I'll be okay. I don't care about anything else. As long as I have this one thing, like, I'll be fine. And then I started getting lost in the air. And, like, you spot these, you have visual cues that you want to see, like, the water three times, so you know how to kick out and land on your head. And I was spotting the sky, the wall, I didn't know where I was. I mean, I would go in this, like, back bend position, kind of expecting to try not to hit flat on my back. I was trying to, like, brace myself, and then I hit on my stomach. Like, I got so disoriented. I didn't know right side up from upside down. And so that one thing I thought I had this firm hold on was just, like, taken from me. And I remember I was in the middle of this diving meet. It was in New York City. Mm-hmm. It was in front of a live crowd of, like, 4,000 or 5,000 people. It was on live TV. I'd never been in a situation like that before. It was really overwhelming. And I was going through all of that at the time. And I just remember thinking, like, gosh, I have just made a mess of my life. And it's because, God, I didn't trust you with it. And I know that no matter what happens, like, if I put my life in your hands, even if this is it, I'm going to be better off with my life in your hands. And I remember just kind of this moment of repentance and really, like, I don't want to do things my way anymore. I want to do things your way, because I know the plans you have for me are better. And I know your purpose is greater than my own. And I remember trusting him in those moments, like, through this really scary time in that competition. And I had no business doing well in that competition because I didn't know what I was doing. I was a complete wreck, but I ended up winning. And what I felt like God was telling me wasn't that, like, hey, trust me and you're going to win all these gold medals. You know, it was more like, when you put your life in my hands and you trust me with it, you can trust me with it. I have a plan for you, you know, and I'm going to be here, and you can trust me to be your foundation. And I felt like, you know, every time I had been through a storm or some awful situation in my life, I know that he's right there with me in it. And so, you know, that he is, like, the cornerstone. God is the cornerstone. And I can always have that firm foundation in him. And so that's kind of where it began, you know?
Yeah, like, this is the thing. I think, how can I put it? If it's not, like, I think many a person can get lost in life when they don't, it's a case of, they don't have that sort of strong sense of purpose. Like, there is a corporate fit saying where it's like vision and purpose. And they use that as their sort of corporate motto. But I think people in all need that as well, because, like, if you don't have a vision, if you don't have a purpose, that why, and, look, there can be fuzzy whys and strong whys. Like, the difference between them is this, in my opinion. A fuzzy why, you've got to drag it, pull it, drag it through the mud, drag up hills and stuff like this. And eventually you'll get tired with it and you'll, like, let it go to the wayside. A strong why, it pulls you along. It's like gravity. Like, regardless of, like, oh, I'm tired, it's like, no, You're coming with me. We're going to do this. And like, yeah, when you've got that vision, purpose gives you that why.
I love that. That is the best. That is the best to strip the fuzzy why and the hard why. I like that. That's really good.
Hey, yeah. Look, this is the thing. I won't lie. I have been a proponent of many a year gone by where, yes, I've had fuzzy whys. And look, I won't lie. There most probably be fuzzy whys will come up again in my life. But like, it's one of those things where I'm not going to torture, like, or kick myself time and time again. If I have got that fuzzy why, it's like, oh, okay. Truly remember that why, truly remember that purpose. Remember the other vision. If you don't have a vision for it, like, okay, work it out and build that vision. Then find that purpose. And then, yeah, put it into that why and take it from there. Cause, like, there's no harm in starting again. I think people forget that often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? I love that. Yeah. I love it.
Hey, what can I say? I've given you
a mic drop right now. I just
yeah. Someone comes in from the side, puts a jacket on me, like, yeah, that's like, yeah, like, to the king, yeah, but yeah,
my work here is done.
So, like, yeah, so how many sort of talks have you done in your, like, sort of time now? Because, okay, yeah, 2020, a lot of talking going on then, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, just like these talks or like talking in general? Because I've been doing public speaking for,
yeah.
I mean, since I won the Olympics, I kind of got thrust into that and I hated it. Like, I was one of those people who's like, I would, yeah, just rather be in the grave than giving the eulogy. You know what I mean? Like, I did not like public speaking, did not like being in front of people. Performing, great. Using my voice, no. And it was terrifying to me after the Olympics to be put in those situations. But I eventually got put into one where they helped me learn how to get comfortable sharing my story and tell it in a different way and get comfortable walking around on a stage and actually kind of started to enjoy it and fall in love with it, you know. And I got a couple of years where I got to do this tour where we spoke to teenage girls, which, I mean, you got to be real with teenage girls. You can't be faking it up on stage because they can see right through you. But there would be this audience of like 10,000 screaming teenage girls. And it was the coolest experience that made me fall in love with sharing my story and seeing, because you don't often get to see the fruit of like how you sharing something with somebody maybe will impact their life. You don't always get to see that. But like these girls, I mean, years later were emailing me, hey, when you talked about this on stage, I remembered that. And I was able to do this, this, and this, and it has changed my life, you know, and that, like, that has been the coolest thing to me. And it just encourages me to keep sharing my story. And so, yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten to share it, but it's every time it's a gift because I'm like, well, I hope it can impact somebody else.
Yeah, no, like, this is the thing. Wow. Like, look, this is like, you could be seen by like boys, girls everywhere as a hero for winning the Olympic medal and going, right. Now, like, I can only imagine like being seen as a mentor, someone who's helped guide the sort of next generation along. That must have a different quality, but I don't actually understand like the sort of difference between the two. Like, do you think you know the difference between the two of like the Olympian hero figure to the sort of mentor hero figure, if you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I think so, because I mean, the Olympic hero is, I mean, somebody you see and you're like, you're so inspired by their action and what they did and their performance. And you're like, wow, maybe I can do that too. Like, it's inspirational and encouraging. Like, if they could do that, maybe I could, you know, that way. But when somebody is actually like mentoring you and leading you along, it's more of a relationship and a friendship, and it's deeper than that. And it almost doesn't matter if that person won or not, you know, it's what they're doing for you and with you, and you trust them. Like, I think my coach is probably, obviously, to me, one of the most amazing mentors and leaders that I've had in my life. And he never won the Olympics. Mm. You know, he went to the Olympics for Canada a couple of times, and he's been a coach a number of times. But you know, he never won, but he has taught me such great lessons, and he understood what it did take to do it, and he got me there. And all the while in humility and in confidence, like, he just instilled such great character traits, you know, in me. And so I think the mentor thing is much more precious. It's harder to do on a large scale because you need that closeness and that intimacy, I think, to really get in there with a person and help them through things.
Right. So, like, this is the thing. Should I be calling you an Olympian or a coach? That's the thing what percolates in my mind at this present time. Like, yeah. So, yeah, Coach Laura.
Bedroom.
Okay. Like, yeah, maybe as inspirational as a certain coach, like Ted Lasso, but that's another
Oh my
story.
goodness, I love Ted Lasso. Can we just stop and talk about that for a minute? I am in love with that show. It is the best thing I have seen in so long. Oh, I mean, are you in love with it? Is it not the best thing?
Now, look, put it this way. Recently, I acquired a new iPad, and I get 3 months of Apple TV with this iPad. I was like, okay. I was like looking through, like, all I'm gonna say to you, Apple, like, you need to get more content on that thing because no. And like, I've heard good reports about Ted Lasso, and look, like, I have a rule. You like, if it's a new TV show, you've got 3 episodes to win me over. I was like, watch the first episode. No, I laughed hard. I laughed well, and I enjoyed it. Second episode in, third episode. But like, I was thinking, if it was going to be like, oh, I'm this happy guy and everything like this, and then like the whole thing is like the sort of twists and like little turns, and like, I'm, yeah, you are a kind, upbeat fellow who really is out there for everyone who is around him, making their lives that little bit better. But oh, your waters run deep, sir, and like the pain, like, it's like, yeah, why are you, like, it was like, I'm not gonna, like, yeah, why are you in the United Kingdom doing, no, we're not gonna spoil it, any of this, but like, why are you doing what you're doing? It was like, okay, then it kind of becomes a little bit more clearer, and they're like, okay, it's like, yeah, how would that affect, and it's like, okay, it's like bit by bit, and I was like, okay, it was like, the thing what drew me in was, everyone felt like a very full-rounded character.
Yes.
And the sort of trials, tribulations, the joys, and like, yeah, many of the hopes which came through some of these people so quickly, it was like quite amazing. And like, yeah, I've got to say, like, one of the things I found interesting is like, yeah, they could, it seemed like they were going to go with the archetypal bitch character, if you get what I mean. But they didn't do it. I was like, oh, I was surprised at that. I was like, okay.
I've been surprised a lot in like a good way. You know what I mean? That
Absolutely.
it's not always what you think it's gonna be, but they, man, they just hit you so good. Like it's and they always leave you wanting more too, which is I think a great thing because sometimes you're like, I'm done with it, you know, but not this show. Like you're always wanting more. And I think that's a great I don't know. It's got all the things and it's we're always laughing and then crying and then you know, it's got all the emotions in it, right?
Yes, you. I take it you've watched both seasons, right?
Oh yes, have you?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I was like, season 2 is totally different. Yeah,
Yeah,
which is
no.
great.
Season two, the Christmas episode. It was the I know, like, the one moment which slayed me is when, like, yeah, uncle, niece, and it was go on. And that's what I'm gonna say. Anyone else, yeah, watch it. I watched that. I was literally on the floor. And
There's
like,
yeah, his niece is awesome.
I've got to say, and also the tagline in the first season for one of the characters, football is,
Life.
there you go. Football
Yes.
is life. I was like, ah, yeah.
Football is life. Except when football is death.
Oh no. That's like, yeah, I was going to say.
That
Yeah,
was
no,
short-lived,
yeah. That was some tragic tea what came from that first episode. I was like, oh my God.
when that came around in the second season too, that was pretty
Yeah.
cool. But yeah.
Yeah. I got to say, yeah, it was a very refreshing show. And like, look, what I got to simply say is, look, like, the amount of Americans out there which love Downton Abbey and stuff like that. Oh, Downton Abbey, like, oh, rich people doing posh things. Yeah, like, let's just say Ted Lasso, like, there's real elements of truth to the football psyche of a fan in the United Kingdom.
That's what I know, it's a little bit realistic too.
That's like I'm just watching it, like, yeah, you got that right. Look, put it this way, my lady is in the front room watching episodes of it now. I was like, you know, I put it on for her last night and she was like, yeah, no, I don't really want to. I was like, yep, I just.
Okay, well, before we overdo the Ted Lasso thing and we can move on, who is your favorite character in the show?
Ooh.
I know that's a tough question.
It's not just individual characters. It's like character pairings, if you get what I mean.
How they work together.
Yeah, because like this is the thing. I've just watched it, so the names are like a little bit, but like the owner of the club and like, yeah, like the model who's the mentor, yeah, love those two together. And when like her best mate comes into it and her daughter, that's like, yeah, this sort of like ball of energy, what goes on, like, okay, Ted Lasso and like, yeah, his coach. Yeah, all I've got to simply say is I'm interested to see where his like psyche goes in season three. Yeah, beard. Oh my god, how you doing? No, it's like, yeah. But the two I do like is Tat, like Tat, and like, oh, why am I blanking on his name? But the old veteran footballer. When they're
Roy Kent.
Oh my god, how like you? That's like going, yeah, reveal how deep you are into the weeds. But yeah, those are the two which are my favorite ones, because look, like, even though they like, I like with this one bit, I'm gonna like, it's not so much a spoiler, it's a case of when after the sort of FA Cup and you saw what horror the father was.
Oh yeah.
And then it was just like, no word said, everything like this. And he goes over and hugs him.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I won't lie, that kind of got me a little bit misty-eyed, because it was just like, yeah. I think that, like, you know what I mean? I think a lot of people could go, yeah, that is most probably one of the realest moments and reactions. Oh, no, you're about to go, I can tell.
I think they played that so well without the words and just that moment. Yeah, it was. I don't want to spoil it for people watching. Go watch Ted Lasso. If you have not watched Ted Lasso, go watch Ted Lasso.
I agree. And like, this is the thing, like, they need to get that. Like, it's a shame it's just on Apple TV, because if it was on Netflix or Amazon, that show would be absolutely huge. And like, yeah, Apple needs to get that out there, and like, yeah, just like, even if they put it on like first three episodes out there in the wilderness to draw people in. Yeah, huge fan of it. Huge.
Totally agree. Awesome. Yeah. I knew we could be friends.
That's like, yeah, on the occasion, yes, absolutely. Now I have to ask, now look, you with your podcast, now this is the thing. This is not your first throw of the dice at podcasting, is it?
No, I hosted one for an organization that I had worked with for a little while, and that was fun. It kind of got my feet wet, kind of taught me how to do it, and yeah, so then I kind of launched out on my own, and it's been awesome.
Okay, yeah, so with like, when you went, okay, I'll do this podcast for this organization, was it a case of a little bit more like restrictive, or was it a case of you like going, okay, what am I doing and why am I meant to be here doing what I'm doing?
A little bit of all of that. It was kind of, I was on an athlete advisory board for this organization and they wanted to start a podcast. I said, well, cool. I've been looking to host one. Like, I've been looking to do one, don't know how to do it. So we kind of figured it out together, and they definitely had like a goal with what they wanted us to talk about in each episode. And so we kind of went by that, and somebody wrote our intro scripts and things. And so, you know, I had a good time, but when they were basically like, we're just going to do the one season and we don't have funding for another one right now, that's when I was like, okay, I have some ideas now of what I want to do, and I want to be a little more open and all that kind of stuff. And so it was a great learning on the job kind of thing and doing it with people that I, you know, was friends with and cared about, and now getting to do it my own way has been really fun too.
Yeah. So like, this is the thing. So what, like, okay, like what made you like, okay, you know what, my own podcast, I got to get out there and do it. Like, yeah. How did you get it started? What was the big kickoff, the jump off, as they say, into the frame? Well,
the pandemic. Okay. Honestly, gave me a little extra time. You know, I was actually working on it, and I was going to have it launched before our Olympic trials in 2020. Mm. But then obviously when that got postponed, we just decided to launch it around the same time frame anyway. And that just gave me more time to kind of build up that year and interview a lot of people. And so to me, it's really, you know, I don't feel like athletes, at least like in my position, I don't have a lot of resources. I don't have a lot of ways to get services or learn things. And so, and the best way that I have learned is just talking to other athletes and other coaches. Mm. And so that's who I started bringing on other Olympians who've been through things, you know, sports psych, sports nutrition, like different experts and coaches, you know, people who were an athlete that became a coach and like what their experience has been like. And, you know, their stories are great. The inspiration is great, learning what they go through, because everybody goes through something, you know, there's always challenges, and to see how they navigated them and when it worked and when it didn't, but then also that they're providing like resources and tools and tips for the people listening, I think has been great. And I mean, honestly, selfishly, it was a little bit for me too, because I didn't, even though I'm a three-time Olympian, I have like zero access to our Olympic committee because I'm not on a current high performance team. So, you know, it was a way for me to find out information and a way for me to learn outside of the box a little bit, but also yeah. I get to give that back to all the other athletes too.
Yeah. I'm a little bit surprised at that. Like, I would have thought being an Olympian, or is this the way they're like the whole like system works? Oh yes. You're out there by yourself now. Being an Olympian and especially a gold medalist, like you would sort of have access to this sort of wider community and sort of pool of knowledge, like, yeah, like just there.
I have certain accesses, like I can access basically like, what's the word I'm looking for? You're never a former Olympian. You're always an Olympian. Yeah. But I have services for like post athletic career, you know, like I can work with their jobs, teams. I can do things like that with them, but I have no services as an athlete because I'm not selected on our governing body's like high performance team, if that makes sense, or at least haven't been to this point, just because my journey back has been really up and down and I haven't been able to perform well at the competition or be at the competitions where they're selecting those. So, you know, it's just kind of been a timing thing too, but because of that, I have no access and I've asked and I've just kind of got denied. So I have to find other ways to do things and other people to help me. And so I want to show other people how to do that. When nobody is there for you, how do you figure out how to do it on your own? We got to get scrappy. Yeah. You got to figure it out. You got to talk to people, you know, and how bad do you want it?
Yeah, indeed. No, I totally understand that. And like one of the things when you mentioned with job, like having access to jobs after, one of the things which is, I think, if you're not in the know, and I like only remember this because I watched, it was a show called Trans World Sports and like a few documentaries here and there. One of the things when someone stops being an Olympian, whatever level that might be, because of the training regime and everything like this, it's like you kind of like go, okay, it's not what you go, the most well-paid job. It might get you fame, but sometimes it's not going to get you a lot of fortune. And like, let's just say with recent successes for Team GB, hurrah, like, yeah, a gold medal like doesn't have the same weight as it used to when we hardly won anything. It was like, our only Olympian, welcome. Now it's like one of our many Olympians, yeah, sit down in the crowd. Like, what has it been like, what has the sort of job market been like for either yourself or other Olympians you've seen along the way?
It depends on your sport. Diving is a small sport, at least in our country, and it's not super popular. I mean, it's popular at the Olympics, but not in the 4 years in between. And so for us, it is very challenging. You know, you get sports like track and field, swimming, gymnastics, they tend to be more highlighted sports all the time. And so they can get the bigger backing and bigger sponsors, at least more athletes tend to be able to do that, where a handful of us can do it in diving. But I mean, you really have to have somebody help you, or you might be working a part-time job, or you kind of become an entrepreneur and just find other ways to bring in money, or you have parents helping you. So it's tricky if you want to dive for us post-college, because most people in America will go to like a collegiate system, at least for a few years. And if you want to keep diving beyond that, that's when you have to figure out a way to do it. So it's tough. And it's amazing. Because like you said, some people think, oh, you're Olympian, you've done all these things, you must have everything paid for. And it's like, well, I mean, they pay my ticket to the Olympics. But other than that, it's kind of all on our bill. You know what I mean? Like, I have to pay all my medical bills, I have to do all the other stuff. So
Oh God, that must be hard. And like, look, when like the whole thing is, I don't know about you, but like when you say collegiate, look, I had like, I look upon the collegiate system with like, oh, how can I say, it's crooked. I say this, not you, me. I say it's crooked and unfair. And like recently, I know they've given access to anyone who is a college athlete to be able to promote themselves and use their likeness to like, help make that little bit of cash. Because honestly, it is a bizarre, crazy system. Because look, I have stood in the middle of Cornell, like university. And like, I was just like, I looked around, because UK, like if you go to Oxford, or if you go to Cambridge, it's like number of colleges all dotted around in this city. And like, you've got big universities, but nothing like this. And I'm swear it most probably repeats itself wherever you go in the States. My friend was like, if you go a mile in any direction, you're still on college property. I was just like going, oh my God, I saw the sports stadium in the distance. It was just like, the place was vast. Something what generates that much money can pay their athletes, regardless of it being basketball, football, even all the way down to diving. Look, here you go. Here's a little bit of this. Here's a stipend. Get on with your life. Represent the university. And good times. But that's mad. It's like, sorry. I'm back in the room. It's like, back in the room. But you can say, I get it. Or you can just like smile and go, I'll move swiftly on from this. It's
good times. I'm still trying to like figure out how I feel about all of it. Cause when I was in school, I mean, it was a lot different. It was over 20 years ago, you know, it was in the late 90s, or as my kids say, you lived in the 1900s, you know? So, you know, aging myself, I know, but like in the 90s, in the 1990s, you know, got a scholarship, and like that to us was getting paid to go to school. And then that, you know, they did pay for living, they paid for food, it covered everything, but we couldn't get like the athlete assistance stuff. Like I had also qualified within our governing body for like training assistance, but we weren't allowed to take that because it was getting paid. It was like getting paid, and that you weren't allowed to because you were in this amateur athlete in college. And now, you know, not only can you receive that assistance fund, you can also get sponsors, and you can also do that, what do they call it? The name, image, likeness. So I don't know. I mean, like, I'm kind of happy for the athletes. Like, that's great, I guess, that they can bank off of that. I don't know what that's going to do to the system. And I don't know how that's going to play out. And so I don't really know how I feel. I'm not a finance person, so I'm not really sure how it will all unfold, but it's kind of fascinating to watch.
You must say again, let's see how this one plays out. It's like, hopefully plays out well. Hopefully goes nicely for them. But now you, my friend, put it this way, my very active, overactive, hyper aggressive, no, determined, driven friend. You wrote a book. You say, what went through your mind to go, you know what? I've brought you four children up into the world. I have gone back to diving. I talk to thousands of people. I have a husband who I keep over there. Now, Wait, sorry, I forgot. I also have a podcast. And now I must become an author. What brought this on? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I kind of always wanted to write one, but of course the timing just never seemed right. And as I was getting back into diving, we thought that would be just a good time to do it. And it was kind of actually cool. You know, it's not an autobiography. It's not like my whole story, but it's kind of the lessons I learned along the way and some little stories from throughout my career. And it was actually really cool. I wrote this chapter on fear and overcoming fear. Mm-hmm. And it was about a very specific dive that I had to learn and the process I went through to overcome this big fear obstacle to do it as I was relearning it for the first time in 9 years. And so it was kind of special to be like going through this writing process as I'm kind of reliving all of it, really. And so it was kind of this beautiful process. We didn't get to publish it until just this last year. So it's really cool that it's like, it's real now. You know, here's one of the first preview copies we got. So it's just kind of, it's cool that it's like a real tangible thing now, you know?
Excellent. Excellent. What is the book called?
It's called Life at 10 Meters, Lessons from an Olympic Champion. So sorry, it's the preview copy here, so it's kind of blurred out, but you can get on Amazon, you can go to my website, you can get all those places. So
excellent, excellent. Now I have to ask. Now this is most probably the last question I'm gonna have for you. But yes. Now you are aware of the Muppets, the Muppet Show, and yeah, everything like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, think of a film, your favorite film, maybe.
Okay.
What is that film?
I don't know if I have a favorite film. I don't know if I have a favorite film. Or I like a lot of films. That's my problem.
Which would be in your recent sort of top three?
Oh gosh. Well, you know, I mean, I watched some classics this last year, just going into Olympic trials, and like For the Love of the Game was one. And I feel like that kind of, it makes me think about my book too, because he's like going through this process at the end of his career. And he's like kind of reliving all these moments throughout, you know, his journey to get there. And so that kind of reminiscing, I feel like happened a lot this last year. So I wouldn't say that's my favorite movie, but that one was close to my heart this year.
Okay. The Love of the Game. Now, take that movie and like replace the whole cast of that movie with Muppets, except one human actor.
Replace it with Muppets?
Replace them all with Muppets. Except one member of the cast. Like with the original cast. Yeah.
Okay. I guess Kevin Costner might be Kermit. I mean, pretty main Muppet. I don't know who the woman would be. Oh my goodness. I guess Miss Piggy. I mean, you know, if we're going to keep it classic there, you know. I'm sure where we're going with this.
No. It's just an interesting psychological dive into like my guests to see where they're at and like what percolates in their mind. Yes. Sometimes I get interesting things, and sometimes I get disturbing things. Nothing wrong with Love of Game. Mm-hmm. It's like, run, kids, run.
Nice. At least it wasn't like Animal or anything, you know, on his drums. So there we go.
Fair enough. No, God. I got to say, yes. Laura, thank you for coming on today. You have been charming. You have been wonderful and a delight to have on as a guest.
I appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun. You are very entertaining and charismatic and fun to talk to. I loved some of the points that you made. Loved talking about Ted Lasso and even weirdly the Muppets.
There you go. Yes, indeed. Can you tell the lovely people how they can find you out on these interwebs?
Oh, yes. LauraWilkinson.com. You can find everything you need there. My podcast is The Pursuit of Gold. The book is Life at 10 Meters, Lessons from Olympic Champion. Find me on Instagram, Lala the Diver. I love to hang out in my DMs and chat. So I look forward to talking to you.
Excellent. Excellent. Go out there. Follow her. And yes. Yes. get into the mindset of an Olympic champion. Yeah, baby. Laura, thank you for coming on today. You have been a superstar, Olympian, and then some. A motivator, too. There you go.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Excellent. And I'd like to say thank you to you, my friends, my life warriors, who are still watching here today. Please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic, be all the positive bees you can be in this world, and then some. Have a great day, guys. Yes. Peace. And we are...